Well, good evening, boys and girls. Good morning and good night to all the ships at sea and people beyond and wherever. Like to thank the people in Australia for listening, England, Germany, Brazil, Canada. I mean, lots of countries around the world. I was just checking the stats, and then
you got Australia too.
Oh yeah, no, but you know, the Aussies—they're hanging there pretty good with us.
Nice.
Yeah, a little more English than Australians listeners, but you know,
they're both one and the same, aren't they?
I don't know if I want to go there. I think we just lost all our Australian listeners right there. That was like, boom. I don't even know if they play cricket the same way.
No.
So, okay. But anyway, this is Fish and Frank here in the chair and Robert across from me. And our beautiful studios in downtown Charlotte Harbor, Florida. And, you know, which doesn't even exist on the maps anymore.
No.
I don't get it, how the post office can mess this up, because you got Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda, but Charlotte Harbor was here before Port Charlotte, and only the post office could screw stuff up. No wonder they can't make a living.
You know? Yeah, but even before the hurricane, Port Charlotte didn't exist.
Yeah, I know. It's just... Anyway, to the fishing. To the fishing! To the fish! Yes! Okay.
Yeah, that's easier to geographically figure out than the other stuff.
Yeah, so let's... start up on the Peace River.
Yeah, definitely. That would be
Harbor Heights. Are you kidding me? It's August.
Exactly.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's beautiful scenery. You know, I mean, the big thing is up there on the river right now is alligator season opened up, so you're gonna have a lot of guys up there messing around with that. But other than that,
yeah, if you want to go gator hunting, there's some nice gators up in the river right now, but yeah, they're hard to find because it's so hot. They go into their dens. They go underground, and you know, they're laying in the water. They want to cool off, you know.
Yeah. So exactly.
But getting up around I-75, a few black drum, a little bit of snook,
occasional small tarpon.
Yep. Now we do have some small tarpon up by Harbor Heights. Not a lot, but you know, I wouldn't say it's enough to go fishing for them. But you know, we are seeing them a little bit up there by the heights.
Yeah, but if you're going out for a boat ride, I mean, you never go out on a boat without a fishing pole.
Yeah, but if you head down around 41, it picks up a little bit more black drum, a lot of tarpon early in the morning.
Yeah, the early morning bite and night bite down there has been really, really good for the tarpon.
Yeah.
And most of them are on the smaller side, but there are some like 60 to 80 pounders down there. You know, and then the other thing too that started to move in this past week, but not enough to really target, just consider it incidental catches, some redfish.
Yeah.
You know, it's that time of year where those reds move in and out of there sporadically for the next few weeks, and then they play that disappearing act again.
Well, let's hope not too soon. Port Charlotte canals, we got a little bit of snappers, a lot of snook in the Port Charlotte side in the canals. I mean, gazillions of snook.
Yeah.
Tough catch during the day. At nighttime, not so bad.
You find the right spillway that's moving, or the right bridge that's got some real good water current.
Yeah, you're going to do pretty good on the snook over here. A lot of tarpon mixed in with everything.
Yeah.
We're here at more and more different types of fish, but I'm going to still say right now, if I was going to go, I'd be targeting snook or tarpon if I was going into Port Charlotte.
Definitely.
Some big black drum, though, moving in some of the back canals. If you get over on the Spring Lake system, you got some monster black drum starting over in there.
Just a matter of finding them. They can be as elusive as some of your other fish sometimes. Even as big and slow and dopey and lethargic as they seem to be, they do a pretty good Houdini act.
Yeah. And then heading over, I'm going to just cross the river and go into PGI. Big jacks. I mean, really nice jacks. I mean, I was, you know, those are the jacks you hope and pray for. When I was a captain out on the water, I'd going back there, and times like this we get those big jacks and we get 2-3 people hooked up, and I just sit there and they said, what do we do? I said, wait till two of you break off, we'll follow the last one and catch it.
Yeah,
there's nothing else you could do. You just sit there and hang on, because they're in control, you know, for the first, I'd say, 3 to 5 minutes. You got no control on a jack.
You don't realize how much you miss them until they're not around anymore.
Yeah,
you know, when they raise that price on that.
Well, Jack Crevel is a delicacy in a lot of places. It's a very high-priced food fish.
Well, and they also use it a lot in the commercial pet trade, too, for dog foods and cat foods, too.
Right, but they take the fillets and use that for human consumption, purpose. And then grind up the rest of it to make the, you know, animal food and just about everything. But it's got so much oil and everything in it; it's a really healthy fish.
Right.
Now, smoking anything means it's not healthy. But if you to get fish oils out of it,
right.
Jack Crevel is my favorite smoked fish. Out of all the fish I've ever had smoked, I'd rather have Jack Crevel than anything. I can't think of a better fish to smoke and enjoy.
I've never had it.
Really good. Really, really good. Because it's nice and even. It's not like mullet where you have a little bit that's wonderful and a little bit that's nasty. It's right. just a nice, even consistency. I'd say better than Spanish mackerel smoked, and that was my favorite up until I tried the smoked jack.
That's pretty impressive. Never had that opportunity.
But PGI in the canals, we got a lot of small tarpon, kind of like Port Charlotte, a lot of small tarpon, bunch of snook, a lot of them underneath the docks. If you're out in daytime, you want to find some, look anywhere where there's shade. Big boats,
yeah.
Docks, anything like that will hold snook during the day.
Lots of shade and moving water.
Best bets.
Find some of those points where you're getting good moving water.
And wherever two canals come together, find the dock around wherever... closest dock to where two canals come together where that water's going to be moving, and you're going to have a bunch of mangrove snapper there.
Absolutely.
A lot of mangrove snapper.
A few black drum over there still, too.
Yeah.
And then the sand bream have been starting to move around a little bit more, too. There's been very scattered reports on them, but the few that the guys have been catching have been nicer sized ones.
Hearing them in Port Charlotte and PGI, I forgot about them. Sand bream is such a great eating fish. It's a saltwater crappie is basically what it is. Easily identified because they're slender, tall, and they have a mouth that when you grab the mouth and pull it out, it protrudes out a good 3/4 of an inch or an inch.
Yeah.
I mean, the mouth has a long extension to it. It's a really cool fish. A piece of shrimp meat on a crappie jig or a piece of shrimp meat on a number 6 hook under a bobber. But you want to be close to the bottom with it, but you're using the bobber to keep it up off the bottom. Because they will feed on the bottom, but I do way better under, and basically pretend you're crappie fishing.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I mean, they are a saltwater crappie is one of the best ways to describe them, except for they don't swim around in massive schools.
Oh, no, they do.
This time of year, though, it's usually...
But they're like crappie. They spread out, and then when they go to spawning season, it's all the big, huge schools. So, now I'm going to call you. Very seldom are you wrong, but this time, no, because they do the same thing as crappie. As soon as they go to spawn season,
right, but that's more in the winter time.
Thousands, yeah. But we weren't talking about winter. This ain't winter. This is like summer, early fall.
Right.
So, okay.
I submit it. You win.
You know, I'm sorry. You were just out of line here, buddy. Anyway, no.
At least it wasn't a Spanish.
Yeah, I know. Okay, going to the Alligator Creek. We got a little bit of redfish right near the mouth of Alligator Creek.
A few jacks over there too, but most of those are a little bit on the smaller side, but still fun.
I'd be fishing around that island over there. I like that little island at the mouth of Alligator Creek at this time of year. You're going to find some snook up by the marina and scattered here and there throughout. The locks would probably, where the locks used to be, going over to Burnt Store, you know, between Alligator Creek and Burnt Store, that old lock system they took the locks out, but it's still narrow there.
Right.
A lot of good water flow. I'm going to bet there's some nice fish there.
Yeah, there's probably some good snapper in there.
I would say that'd be pretty good right there.
There's also been that school of redfish over by Whorehouse Point. They've been moving in and out of there. I haven't heard much about them in the last probably week, but they should still be there. They usually don't leave for very long once they first show up.
Yeah, you really want to get there on real low tide and get there just at low tide and then prepare to hang out. Because if you leave, you're going to miss them. You got to wait for the water to get high enough for them to want to move up onto that flat. Because they head out into the harbor and they'll be out there. But as soon as that tide starts coming up, they are going to show up. If you're there at high tide, you may or may not find them. The only way I really ever found those fish is being there at low tide and putting the time in, just sit and wait. Great day to have an umbrella or a bimini top on it. We just mounted 2 biminis on the bus last night.
Yeah.
Works out great because you can lean them against each other. They don't have to lay down.
Go. So you get full coverage that way.
Well, we got one in front of the other one, so the driver all the way up to the front seats of the bus are covered in the shade. But when you go to set them down, the front one leans on the back one, And so they're out of the way. They're not laying on the deck when they're down. They support each other as you run.
Perfect.
So it's actually really neat. It doesn't create a lot of wind resistance when, you know, you roll them all up together and wrap them. But we did that, mount another live well. You know, the bus is going to be a heck of a boat when it's all done.
It's going to be awesome. It's and comfortable.
Really needed a front step. I'm getting too old to step up in the front deck of these boats. So, I had Chuck Hep, Chuck's Custom Carpentry. I don't know what I'd do without Chuck. But, I had a live well, but I needed a base for it. And so Chuck came over, and there was no way I was going to make those cuts to match the bottom of that boat
right. And
the side of the boat and get everything to fit in there where it wanted to be. And he wanted to do the normal thing. And I think you said it best. The reason I have such a problem getting people to do what I want to do is I don't do anything normal. You know, it's
right. Just
a little bit weird. And so we mounted it in. It would have been easy to drop it right in the deck, but we had Chuck come out. He built the whole base for it. We mounted it all up last night. It's great. And now you can step up and down, and that live well is actually a step.
There you go.
Really makes a big difference. You know, you saw my legs cramping up this morning. Couldn't move. So, those steps are, that's a killer.
Yeah.
When you're not used to it.
It makes it a lot more convenient, without a shadow of a doubt.
Wonderful. I'm real happy with the way the bus is working out. We got Carl running it. We've got a couple other captains that use it occasionally to take charters on. It's my rent-a-bus, only to a very, very few select licensed and insured captains.
Right.
It's not for rent to anybody else. Going down the east side of the harbor, we got some snook kind of scattered from right at the top by Alligator Creek all the way down through Pirate Harbor, but finding the shade. These fish are really into the shade right now, and good knows I don't blame them. It is hot out there in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Gulf temperature is 90 degrees, so I can imagine the flat's got to be 96, 98 degrees.
Yeah, really hot.
It's got to be toasty.
Now, the redfish still seem to be a little more on the southern half of it. Hearing a few of them out by the bar, but most of them are behind the islands. You get there in the morning, look for the oyster beds. They're feeding around that little troughs and everything else. And then by 9, 10 o'clock, once that sun's up, they're going up under the trees, trying to get in the cuts of the between the islands, the keys, and they're looking for that moving water. Shade and moving water is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Just like me, if I go outside, I want shade and I want a breeze blowing.
Yep.
And it's the same thing for the fish. As we get down to Pirate Harbor, up inside, snappers.
Yep. Some decent mangroves. I mean, the numbers have started to deplete just a little bit, but the quality is still pretty good. There's also been some juvenile tarpon up inside Pirate Harbor area. And then on the backside right there around Hobbs Point, you got your mixture of your mangrove snapper, a few bigger redfish, occasional snook, obviously. Other than that, it's been, you kind of have to work at it right now, even on that southern end of that side.
Oh, I don't think there's anything what I would call easy fishing over there, but if you're a little patient,
yeah, it's not,
and sneaky.
Yeah,
being sneaky right now is a big thing out there because there's not a lot of boat traffic. When there's not a lot of boat traffic, everything's quieter. You got to be quieter.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a lot of boat traffic, they get kind of used to the noise.
Right.
But if, like right now, there's not much boat traffic, so you got to be quiet. Going down around Two Pines.
I think the other thing to also talk on that is that the fish are starting to change their feeding pattern just a little tiny bit. White bait and shrimp have been the predominant one kind of all summer, but now they're starting to switch over where those pinfish are just getting to nice size and a lot of them moving around. And also because they're so lethargic and hot, the cut bait is starting to pick up a little bit with the guys using either frozen shrimp, cut sardines, cut ladyfish. We're starting to just at the beginning of that stage, so goes along with the being stealthy and being slow and quiet with everything else.
Yeah. I was reading something. I just got a note. We've very, very soon we're going to be having a call-in show. We're going to try and get this thing on a regular schedule. We're waiting to find out. We do a nationally syndicated show. We're guest hosting on that, and we've been doing that for quite a while. So once we find out exactly what times we're going to be doing that, we're going to configure our weekly fishing report to go right before that, so that you'll know every week and you can call in while we're doing it and help us with our fishing reports.
There you go.
So, but we're still waiting to find out exactly what's going on with our national show, whether we're going to take over as a host or whether the host is coming back, a longtime friend of mine. But we're going to see what happens with that here over the next couple of weeks. And anyway, back to the fishing. Getting around down by 2 points, a bunch of smaller snook down there. Once you get outside there in that kind of opening going to Mat Lachey,
right,
it's a nice spot to kind of look for tarpon. Hearing some trout right outside the bar on 2 points, and as you go down towards Mat Lachey, the Indian fields, we've got some redfish over there, not huge amounts, but enough redfish to keep you busy. And it seems to be kind of a pattern all the way down until you get out the other side, going through the bridges at Mat Lachey, bunch right. of snook. But then the redfish off in the flats on both sides.
Yeah.
Now, it's been, this is the slowest time of the year for the fishing down there right around that Mat Lachey area, because you've got the Caloosahatchee dumping water, the Peace River brings water down, the Myakka River, and
they're
so,
kind of stuck in the middle there.
Yeah, they get a big concentration of that kind of mixed water, and it gets so hot. And then you're not allowed to run boats in Ding Darling. And Ding Darling right now is probably the biggest dead zone we have. There's, I would say, very little, if anything, left alive. They need to open Ding Darling up to idle speed with an outboard. It thatches the grass. It thins it out. It cleans out all that algae and that slime and that muck. We need the outboards in Charlotte Harbor to keep the grass and the flats clean. Now, they shouldn't be allowed to run fast through there, but without the torque and the push of a, you know, 100 horsepower engine, you just can't, it gets so mucked up that nothing can live in that. It's too hot. There's no oxygen. Any fish in Ding Darling right now is probably dead.
Right.
I don't think that they could survive this heat.
That's just the stupid ones. The smart ones actually move out.
Well, that's it. You know, you always got those few, you know, too lazy, too lethargic to leave, and, oh, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
Now you're dead, sucker. But if it's really unbelievable that those people can't figure out the simple solution to it. It costs the taxpayers nothing. It'll bring all the fish back. Just simply let us run the outboards in there at idle speed. It will clean up that grass area, a couple little prop scars in there to open it up a little bit. I know it doesn't sound like you say prop scar, oh, it's a horrible thing. No, it's not.
Right.
The prop scar can be a great thing for bait to go through, for fish to ambush bait. There's good and bad in everything. Too many
Absolutely.
Prop scars is a horrible thing.
Absolutely.
But a few here and there is actually a beneficial thing. And they're just now finding, you know, this is stuff that we've been watching for years. That's why we're against any no motor zones in Charlotte Harbor. Work great in Tampa Bay, work great in the Keys. But they have huge sheet flows of water.
Huge.
We don't have that.
Right.
We don't have the tidal flow. We've got 2 feet of water a day, and that's over 24 hours. We might only gain a foot, a few inches. We need to help nature stay clean, and the only way you can do that is with the big outboard. Hey there. What you up to, Josh? You want to join us? We're doing a fishing report.
Sure.
I'll turn you up here. Take them, whichever one you want. You're going to go on that one? All right. There we go. And Captain Josh Greer just walked in. Yeah, I'm getting you. I'm working on it. Okay.
Hey, there you are.
There you are. Are you okay now?
I'm okay now. Well,
yeah, that's a relative question.
Well, is your radio equipment functioning properly?
That it is.
Okay. So we're down around, right now we've been going through Mat Lachey. We're kind of talking about Ponderosa. You've been down there lately?
I have not been down there lately.
Heard any stories?
But I've heard some stories, yeah. The snook are out on the beach. Still.
How's up in the Caloosahatchee doing?
Haven't heard anything about that.
Okay.
They're probably having the same problem we have with a little bit of fresh water.
A lot of fresh water, yeah. But out along the beaches, a lot of snook. We're hearing a couple reports of pompano. Any? Have you heard anything about that?
I have not heard that, no.
Okay.
I wouldn't doubt it.
How about the sharks?
I've heard out off the beach there's a lot of little sharks. You know, the
Black tips.
Sharp
nose. Yeah.
You know, those kind of sharks. I haven't heard much about big sharks lately, though.
No, they've kind of scattered down a little bit. Most of them have moved offshore.
Yeah.
You know, the passes, though, have got some really, really big snook, some big bull reds moving in and out of there, especially in the evenings and the right at first light.
What's your best pick if you want to find some of those big redfish? Which pass would you go to?
I would either do Redfish Pass or Captiva Pass, personally.
I'd probably go with Redfish. I think that's going to be your best big redfish pass. And it's Redfish Pass. It ought to be.
Yeah.
You know?
It should be there all the time with a name like that.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about Redfish Pass as your best snook pass. But now we get to say Redfish and Redfish Pass.
Yeah.
Kind of wait all year for that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, either one of those passes down there should be good, because that's where all the redfish that go in Pine Island Sound, that's where they come in and out of, is either Redfish or Captiva, one of the two.
So, speaking of Pine Island Sound, some monster redfish, if you can find them, trick would be just to find out how they're getting on the flats. Where are they crossing the bars?
Right.
And just wait for the tide to either start going down. Mm-hmm. Around low tide is the last half of the outgoing, first half of the incoming. It'd be when I would want to look for them.
Yeah, because that's when they're going to move.
I and wouldn't want to.
You're going to find them is when they're moving.
Yeah.
Or be real observant and try to look for that push. You know, those unusual pushes that are out there in some of that deeper water. You'll actually, even if they don't break the surface, some of those schools are big enough when they raise up to either move or because they got spooked by a boat or a shark or a flipper. You know, they'll actually get up and do a push.
And picture, to describe a push, picture if you were swimming and you're standing in the water and you took your arm and you moved it slowly under, just under the surface, and you'll see how the water raises up above it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's similar to what you're going to see on a push of redfish. You're literally looking for the surface of the water being distorted, raised up just a little bit by that school of fish.
Well, and absolutely. Some of those schools are big enough to do that in 4 or 5 feet of water.
Yeah.
Or more. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so you don't have to be in a foot of water to see those pushes and stuff like that.
No.
I mean, those fish will push in 5 feet of water, some of the schools.
But get there around low tide. I would get there towards the last half of the outgoing and then try and sit there and wait for that first part of that incoming, because they're going to get off of that flat as the tide goes down. They're going to try and get back on as the tide goes up. So you got those two windows of opportunity. And once you can see where they're getting on and where they're getting off, that's going to be some great fishing.
Right. Until a tower boat runs you over.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also been some scattered tarpon right there inside the intercoastal.
Or moving 50 up kayaks out. Surround you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, been kind of scattered with the tarpon, but they are fishable numbers down there. You just got to kind of be persistent and just idle around or drift around, but just watch for rolling fish or the occasional jumper. Right now down there in the sound, they seem to be mostly concentrated around the small schools of thread fins. You know, so keep your eye out for those guys.
Yeah, they're still tarping off the beach down around Sanibel and stuff,
yeah.
Too. Captiva Rocks area, stuff like that. And they're on those little schools of bait, the little schools of bait, right on the beach, too.
Cool.
So,
yeah, I hadn't heard anything about beach tarpon. That's the first time we've heard anything that's good.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at my tarpon maps, the area down around Sanibel and Captiva are wrong. They should be yellow to red, not white. But anyway, coming up along through the, if you're walking along the beach, you've got a shot at occasional pompano or Spanish mackerel, but I would say the number one thing is still snook.
Yeah, snook.
Absolutely.
Snook are so unbelievable out there from, I mean, around, especially around the mouths of the passes, but
anywhere along the beach.
Even from the beach all the way up Cayo Costa, Boca Grande, Stump Pass, all the way up to Venice. I mean, there's just snook cruising up and down the beaches.
And a lot of small sharks yet.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's do the golf. The golf has kind of sucked the last few days. I mean, it's just been... sorry, guys. The golf has been very mediocre the last few days. that full moon and that super moon just kind of killed the fishing out there.
Right.
Unless you were out at night, you just weren't doing much.
Right. You know, it's just now starting to get a little bit better in the last couple days, but it's still just on that upswing, so we're still on the bottom of it. The mangrove snapper and the lane snapper have still been doing phenomenal at like 8 to 15 miles out.
You heard anything, Josh?
The only thing I heard about was lanes and mangroves. The bite was really good.
So you were right there with Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I haven't heard much about a lot of guys saying they're waiting for the red grouper to you know, the gags, the red groupers start hit again.
Right. And, you know, I actually chatted with Ralph the other day. And I think the one big thing is like he was saying, last year was such a phenomenal summer.
Who's that, Ralph Allen Kingfisher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Ralph Allen Kingfisher Fleet, you know, he runs the Kingfisher Fleet. He is probably one of the best fishermen I've ever met. Yeah. Ralph is really good, really smart.
Very, very observant, very intelligent. But he was saying, you know, last year we got kind of spoiled with the gag grouper because it was one of the best early season gag grouper, because traditionally speaking, normally we aren't catching good numbers of gag grouper until October, November. You know, that seems to be the best overall months. But last summer, we were whacking them all summer long, you know, in 30 feet of water to 60 feet of water. It was pretty impressive.
Stop
it, Robert.
Those are an endangered species. Stop it.
Yeah.
I was just trying to help Josh. He's been over sitting over there yawning. I figured I'd add a little bit in for him. that wake you up?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
You know, those are endangered species, Robert.
Yes.
The gag grouper, red snapper.
So are amberjack, too.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. Stop it. Okay.
They gave us a whole 2 weeks.
Are you better now?
I'm better now.
Okay.
A whole 2.5 weeks for amberjack fishing. Yeah. It shuts down in, what, 6 more days?
Yeah, something like that.
It's ridiculous.
Bad part is it could get worse.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Well, we only got 2 years to the election. Maybe something will change.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
We'll see. Well, I've had enough of this one. I've never seen somebody who doesn't do anything.
Well,
and that's really, is it just what a nothing to tell everybody who is active in life and does do stuff what they're doing?
Right.
I mean, you know, if he would get out on a boat and go do something, I would have a lot more respect for him. But
that's with the whole bunch of them up there that make these rules.
Yeah, this whole bunch, they're sitting up there in chairs and talk about, I don't care if you go to the gym, it doesn't mean you have a life.
Right.
Get out, go fishing, enjoy the water, take a boat ride, for God's sakes. Look out and see what the rest of us know. It's wonderful out there, and you're trying to screw it up. And I just can't, I don't think you should be allowed to make rules without doing it.
Right.
Spend some time on a commercial boat, spend some time on a recreational boat, and then make the laws.
Or at least go talk to those people. Something.
Even just look
at them. No, they need to just go out and do it. We pay these people a huge amount of money to do nothing but sit on their fat butts and make up rules they don't know anything about.
Well, that's speaking of the huge money that they get paid, they would squawk if their payroll got cut.
Oh.
All they'd have to do is simply look at the numbers. Even if they're too lazy to get outside because they're afraid of the sun or something, or the fresh air, just look at the numbers. You know, the commercial fishing versus recreational fishing is astronomical.
I would just...
And they wouldn't have... The Gulf Council wouldn't have a job. NOAA wouldn't have a job if they actually took the funds that were just produced from the commercial fishing, they would be poverty level.
Yeah, because the whole thing about it is every bit of fishing tackle you buy has a 10% of that. Everything that comes in for fishing tackle has a 10% federal excise tax on it. So 10% of what you're paying for a fishing product goes right to the federal government. That's taxes. That supports all the funding for everything. And you know, I'm just sitting in awe and amazement.
We pay for it, but we can't use it.
You know, but I do have to give
right.
I do have to give our government credit. Anybody who could come up with a device that when you put it next to the door of a government building that sucks the person's brain down 2.5 feet and then replaces it as they walk out the building back up to where it belongs is, in my book, is just absolutely ingenious as heck. I mean, to be able to come up with a device that can suck your brain down 2.5 feet as you walk through a door, to me, is ingenious, inventive. I mean, that deserves a Nobel Prize.
Absolutely.
I thought he was going somewhere serious. I'm like, really? I'm trying to think of something I could give the government credit for. Come on. No, nothing. What the hell are you talking about right now?
All right.
Oh.
That's true, though. Very accurate description, without a doubt.
I don't know what this thing looks like, but I'm thinking it has probe-like protuberances and magnetic qualities. But anyway, let's go on to Lemon Bay. How about Stump Pass? Let's call Stump Pass our next place.
Stump Pass is still doing really, really good on the snook. There's been a few sharks of assorted sizes, mostly on the smaller side. The whiting are still doing real well. A few pompano, small schools of jacks. Lots and lots of bait fish up there along the beaches. You know, that's the other thing with the snook, all on the beaches. There's a ton of varieties of sizes of white bait cruising up and down right along the surf line. So in Stump Pass itself, you're getting a lot of that flow through of the white bait moving in and out, which is bringing in some bigger bull reds that are moving out of from the Gulf into there. I've heard of two nice schools just inside Stump Pass. Where they're at exactly, I'm not sure, because the guys are still being a little quiet about it, but they're pretty decent schools.
Now, I'm going to say one of my redfish spots up there by Stump Pass, if you were coming in from the pass, make the first right, go down about 200-300 yards, about 100 yards maybe, and there's a little kind of a bay there in one of the islands, and it's real shallow at the front part of it, but it gets a little deeper in the back, and I'd bet you there's some redfish in that. Oh, I really would. I would bet there's redfish in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't fished
down
there.
Agree with me. I'm the boss. I'm signing your paycheck. Agree with that.
I would have to agree with that, but it's just it's been so long since I've fished down there from a boat that I'm trying to visualize it. I mean, I remember when I used to fish it out of a boat. You know, we used to look for the dead pines that were right along the beach, and there were specific ones that held redfish, and there was a specific ones that held the whiting real well.
Yeah, fish, I got to tell you, you know, what's the they're bigoted.
They're segregated.
Yeah,
they hang out with each other.
There is
they
no
do
such
hang out with
thing.
Each other, but they hang out with each other in the exact same group. Right. You know, I mean, how is it that redfish? You catch a school of redfish, and they're all 30 inches, like within an inch of each side of that.
Oh yeah.
And then you go and find another school, and they're all 20 inches, and they're all within an inch either side of that.
Oh yeah.
Tribal system. They all grow. They all hatch together. They all grow up together. You know, and
yeah, but they all spread out all over the place, and then they somehow manage to meet. It's like, all right, once you get 20 inches, let's all meet right here.
I call it the dog syndrome. I think they go around, they sniff each other, and okay, yeah, I remember you. You know,
right?
That's a you know, there's got to be.
I don't know why they do it, but you're right. Because you like in the wintertime when you got all these little rat reds everywhere. You go into the mouth of a creek, you start catching rat reds. You're like, well, eventually I'm going to get a legal one. No, you're not.
No.
Right.
You're going to sit there and catch 16-inch redfish till you can't really reel anymore.
But the next canal you go to, they're all 12 inches.
Right.
And then the next canal, they're all 10 inches. It's really
the same hatch. It's got to be. There's no other. They found each other, and that's the ones that hatched and stay together. But it seems like they know when they're big enough to join other ones. But then again, fish, if you're 6 inches smaller than the fish next to you, it will eat you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You might not want to hang out with him.
Yeah, you're...
If we were fish, Robert doesn't want to hang out with me.
No.
Well, no.
I eat him.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
If we're in a plane crash, I'm done.
Yeah.
We're stuck on a deserted island.
I think it's me. I'm the older and weaker, but I'm going to tell you right now, I probably have the worst meat, you know.
I would say, hell no.
Stringy old tough meat. Tough. Yeah. Stringy old tough meat here. I don't think that, you know. I think I'm pretty safe for this. Nobody's going to be looking at me going, he's going to taste good. No. So, anyway, coming down the intercoastal to Placida, the area right around the boat ramp to the Placida Trestle. I know there's some snappers there, snook.
Yeah, the snapper are scattered all over there during the daytime, but the nighttime, the bigger snappers and a little bit more numbers of them seem to turn on. Same way with the snook at night have been really incredible as far as size-wise. During the daytime, you're catching a few smaller ones, but those bigger ones let their guard down at night. A few big bull reds hanging out there. Scattered assortment of sharks. The only thing that's disappeared from over there that I haven't heard much about is, you know, we were talking about earlier, is the spade fish. You know, there was some good spade fish there, and they just kind of, lights went out. It's just a little unusual, even at everywhere for that matter.
Where do they go anyway? I mean, are these the same, do they just kind of, like, because most of these are juveniles that we have around
right.
here. We have very few big adults. I wonder if they don't come down here and spawn like the redfish do, grow up in this area, you know, get bigger, 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 and then once they hit about 12, 14 inches, go out, hit the Gulf Stream, and end up in the Carolinas and
I think they are
Virginias.
More of a, I think they're more of a pelagic fish because over there, you know, like you said, in the Carolinas and Virginia and stuff, they catch them out offshore, like anywhere from 15 to 40 miles. Yeah. Yeah. So and they're very much wreck associated out there.
I saw a big school of big spade fish, like 14, 16-inch fish. I mean, you know, pretty good-sized fish out on Helens last time I was there.
How long ago was that?
2 weeks.
Okay, so that kind of fits in with my theory
I think these were travelers. Good, solid, I mean, big. They were big enough that when I pulled up, I thought they were permanent at first. Because they were all at the surface, fitting out and stuff. And I was like, oh, finally, digging for a crab. Wait a minute, that's not, no.
I'm going to say a big spade fish would fight very similar to an equal size permit.
Right.
Spade fish and a permit, the only way, you know, if you were to close your eyes, I think you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference until they got next to the boat.
Right.
And then they just sit there and do that circle thing around and around and around and around. How they don't get dizzy, I don't know. But I guess they can't fall over, they're in the water.
Right.
But if they were on land, they'd never be able to stand up straight.
But if they disappeared from anywhere, that's probably where they were at. Because, right. I mean,
that's also big fish. The ones I've been hearing about inside have been a little bit on the smaller side.
50 or 60 fish, too. I mean, it was a pretty good size school.
I bet you we could add spade fish to the fish that grow up here, leave, and don't come back except to spawn.
Right.
Redfish, shrimp, tarpon, you know, bunch of other fish.
Right.
A lot of creatures that spawn here but don't actually live here.
Right.
I think we can answer.
They just use us and then leave.
Yes. I feel so abused.
Did they give you a kiss before they left?
No.
No.
See? Yeah. They just come in, take advantage of us, and leave.
If you're listening, fish, I expect flowers.
Yeah. Well, seaweed wrap.
I'd settle for a Snickers bar on the pillow. You know what I mean? So anyway, let's go down to Gasparilla Sound and Bull Bay.
Let's go somewhere way from that section of our comment.
Right. Well, Gasparilla Sound is quite a ways away from Bull Bay. But in Gasparilla, they're still getting some mangrove snapper, redfish at night, especially around those docks right there on the north end of Boca Grande. A lot of snook moving in and out of there. A few tarpon been there early in the morning, but it'd been pretty elusive through there. Then as you move down the intercoastal, moving towards Whidden and Catfish and Bull, out just basically along the deeper side, closest to the intercoastal, has been some redfish, a lot of snook around some of those islands.
Now, haven't you guys seen 3,000 Miles to Graceland? No?
Sure. No.
No? Okay. No. Never mind. All right. So, you know, I just thought I was in a group that had, you know, a certain level of edification. I really did. Yeah. But, you know, you got to watch more Elvis movies. If you're not watching Elvis movies, you just can't keep up.
Were they parachuting out of a plane?
Yes, they did. No. No, he didn't parachute out of a plane. Got thrown out of a helicopter.
Oh, okay.
But anyway.
Different Elvis movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Who's Elvis?
Oh, don't go there. Don't go there. I cried that night, you know? So, back in 77, but you probably weren't even aware yet.
No.
No, he wasn't aware yet. I remember it.
Yeah, I remember
it on the news. I mean, I remember it coming across the news and everything else.
I was playing a gig that night.
Had a great visual.
And we got done, and I was heading back to town, so I was going back to my parents' house. And because I had to be in town, I forget what I was having to do, but I got home. It was like 3:30 in the morning because, you know, the bar closed and we quit playing around 1 o'clock. By the time we loaded the truck, got everything back, it was like 3:30 in the morning before I got back to the house. And my mom was sitting there. I'm like, what the heck is my mom doing up? Right. She says, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, what's up? She says, Elvis died.
Yeah.
But I was actually playing music. I was actually Elvis impersonating right then at that point. So anyway, so yeah, that was back in 77. God, I'm old. So anyway. Yes, that's why I don't have reflective screens in here. I don't need to remind myself of that. So anyway, back up, and Turtle Bay is, I think, where we're at.
Turtle Bay inside has been pretty slow because it's so darn hot and so much fresh water flowing through there. But just at the entrance on that little sandbar / oyster bar, there's been some big bull reds in the early mornings and then in the late evenings.
Yeah.
During the daytime, they kind of, I don't know where they're exactly going, but
If I was going to fish over there by Turtle Bay right now, I would get there about low tide. Mm-hmm. I'd want to catch that incoming tide. So planning on being there around low tide to fish the incoming tide there,
right.
That's when you're going to get that water coming in out of the Gulf. And when you look on the tide graphs, go to fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, click the tide button, and look for when the Boca Grande low tide is.
Right.
And figure on being there about a half an hour after that. Half hour to hour after the Boca Grande low tide, because that's 3.5 hours difference than our tide. It's easier just go on the website and look, it's got a graph there. But if you get there right about then you're not going to have long to wait for that salt water hits and everything lights up. But on the outgoing tide, all that fresh water's coming down that west side and swirls right around that corner, and a lot of it gets drawn right up into Turtle Bay.
Right.
So what I'm going to say, the mouth of Turtle Bay, Cape Hayes, I'm going to get there about an hour after the Boca Grande low tide. And the fishing on Cape Hayes has been pretty good. You got snook, you've got some sharks, you got other stuff there, along with the stuff going into the mouth of Turtle Bay. That's probably one of the better picks right now, if you can get there at low tide.
Right. Yeah, you got to get there as that tide's starting to come back in, and higher salinity and a good mixture in there.
But
you know, it's pretty good.
Anything else happening in Cape Hayes?
Not a whole lot. It's been a little sporadic. You know, I mean, like you said, that key thing is the tide moving in.
Right.
Just as it's starting to make that turn.
Now, see, I would do the opposite thing. As soon as you're around the corner on the west side, I'm going to be fishing that outgoing tide. Even though it's a lot of fresh water, it's bringing down all kinds of weird stuff from the rivers and the Mica River.
Right.
And it's pulling a lot of stuff down. The fish don't mind being in that fresh water, but on the west side, you get that strongest moving water on the outgoing tide.
Right.
And that southern half, where there's still a little bit of salt down there, it's scattered redfish all along there. And you were talking about some bigger redfish out on the bar.
Yeah, there's been some bigger bull reds kind of scattered up and down, and mainly on that southern end of the bar itself. And they're not in tight schools. You know, they're singles, deuces, and triples, you know, not phenomenal amounts, but enough where if you're casting into some of those deeper sand holes and troughs that are over there, you're finding a few here and there. Most of the guys that have been catching them have actually been catching them by accident while they're drifting, looking for the handful of cobia that have been there, but mostly there's been scattered tarpon and miscellaneous sharks in that. And
not enough cobia to fish for, but enough to keep your eye out, because
absolutely,
if you see them with that dark water, they're a little easier to hit right now.
Yeah.
They'll hook up faster.
Absolutely. And those fish have been staying, those bigger bull reds have been in like that 3 feet of water to 4 feet of water range. So the guys that are drifting looking for the tarpon have been catching them just by complete accident, but getting a couple at a time.
Yeah. You know? That's always fun. Those big redfish are such a nice surprise when it happens.
Absolutely.
And we've still got another 2 months of that.
Oh, yeah. This
October,
is just the beginning
November.
Of it. This
hasn't even got started for the big redfish yet.
Yeah.
October, November is when that's going to end. So we've got, you know, a couple more months of getting these big, close to 40-inch redfish or even 40-inch redfish out
Absolutely.
There. So, anyway, looking around the Mica River, I guess you're going to call tarpon, aren't you?
I'm going to call tarpon and sharks without a doubt. A lot of small sharks, especially right at the mouth, but as you're going from the mouth up to Eljo Bean, you've got to look for them, because there's tarpon everywhere, but look for the schools of thread fins, because they seem to be mostly concentrating around those fish, all the way up to the trestle itself. Even on the back side of that trestle, there's been some fish there, especially in the early mornings and right at sunset.
I like fishing that back side of that trestle. It's so calm back there most of the
time,
and nobody goes up there.
Hardly anybody ever fishes back there.
Once in a while, I'll run another boat fishing out there, but everybody wants to fish the inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time of year, when you actually can catch fish, tarpon and stuff on the back side of that trestle, the upriver side of the Eljo Bean, it's a great place to catch fish, because you got a nice average depth. It's about 8 foot, and you get a lot of launches out of the tarpon. They do a lot of jumping, a lot of dancing back there. So it's a great place to tarpon fish, and it doesn't hold, you know, you've only got a month or two in the beginning of the season, end of the season, to really get in on that.
Yeah. And if I'm going to go idling all the way up there to look for the fish, I will never not go up there and just turn around at the bridge. I'll always go through it to the other side and start looking over there. You know, it's just...
I go about 100 yards past and
yep.
shut down. I mean, I'll kill the engine, kill everything, and just... spend a minute, big hat, or put my hands over my glasses so I got a good field of vision, and really watch the surface, because it's always like we compare it to reading another language. But once you understand what you're looking for, and you see that little dimple on the roll, this and that, you can key in on those fish, and they're not particularly spooky back up in there for some reason. Right. I think because of the bridge traffic noise and everything going on the pier. So you can actually get up on them pretty easy back there. Absolutely. If they're there. But you got to take time to look. You got to know what you're looking for, too. And the only way to do that is to get the experience of doing it. Go out and just spend some time learning how to do it.
Yep.
It's fun, and it's great. But now, I would suggest a bimini top or a T-top or something on the boat at this time of year.
An umbrella, something.
Yeah, we put two biminis on the bus last night, you know, so everything from the driver to the front seats.
I'm trying to figure out how to put air conditioning on mine.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Bag of ice on your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, put a T-top up, put a bag of ice in there and a little drip spray line. Yeah. So, anyway, that brings us over to the Myakka Cutoff, which...
The Myakka Cutoff's been, I mean, it's so blooming hot up in there. There's some big, big snook up inside there, but I honestly won't mess with them because it's just so hot. I don't want to wreck the fish just to catch them.
You got to spend a lot of time releasing, but there's some monster snook in there right now. Well over 40 inches.
Yeah.
Big, huge snook. But you're going to have to go to the unusual places. You got to look into the creeks. You got to get off of the main part of the cutoff and get in those back little creeks and be real sneaky, real quiet, and you can get your trophy, you know, your fish of a lifetime in there, but you're going to work for it. But
you better work at resuscitating them, too.
Yeah, you're going to take a lot of time to revive that snook, because fighting in that real shallow, hot, low oxygen water, and they really put up, they get real upset.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they put up a whole lot of energy, you know, in a short amount of time.
Yeah, but if you're looking for the fish of a lifetime for snook fishing goes, that number one best spot right now would be the back end of the Myakka Cutoff, back in those little creeks. But it's tough. I wouldn't, your first three or four trips in there, it's way better to be lucky than good. After that, you shouldn't learn it enough that, you know where the little dimple where the bottom is a little deeper and to cast there before you get there, you know. But anyway, I guess that leaves us finally with the deep holes in the harbor. Well, let's do the two reefs and then the deep holes in the harbor.
Okay. Alligator Creek Reef has been still a little sporadically slow. A lot of small sharks. Some okay mangrove snapper. I think it just depends, and it's been weird because one guy's doing good on an outgoing tide and another guy's doing good on an incoming tide. And it's because, like we talked about last week, you know, with the water, the way it eddies there a little bit coming up the west or up the east wall and kind of swirls there, it changes it a little bit. But
I would call last half of incoming, first half of outgoing. Yeah. Last half incoming, first third outgoing. Okay. Would be my call for that. If I was going to fish the reef right now, if I could time it with the tides, that's what I would do. I'd get there halfway through the incoming tide and plan on fishing about a third of the way through the outgoing. That's going to be your best water.
Right.
So what's going on with the holes in the harbor?
The catfish disappeared for a little bit there in where they weren't terrifying, but now they seem to be making a little bit of a comeback. They're scattered in every one of the holes. It doesn't matter where you go or what you do, the catfish are there.
I think because there's so many schools of thread fins that the fish are messy eaters. They're getting a lot of stuff in the bottom. Not only will the catfish, you know, just chase down and eat the thread fins just like any other fish, but they love all that little garbage laying on the bottom.
Absolutely.
And I think the tarpon, isn't that your best pick for tarpon right now?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be for the bigger tarpon. Absolutely. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to patrol all the 20-foot holes because they seem to be scattered throughout the whole area, but I'm looking for thread fins. Thread fins are kind of the key point to find those tarpon right now. They're not sitting in one spot, it seems like. Last week, there was a lot of guys fishing that lower middle the lower end of the middle 20-foot hole and just on the out back side of that heading towards Cape Hayes. But now, in the last few days, the guys are getting them in Pirate Harbor hole, the middle hole, the upper 20-foot hole, and they're assorted. They're now, 60 to 120 pounds.
What are you throwing at them?
If I had my choice, I'm going to try thread fins and ladyfish for my natural bait. It would be my two choices. I like the ladyfish a little bit better because it deters most of your catfish from messing with them.
And yeah, a whole ladyfish. A whole 12, 14-inch ladyfish.
Absolutely. And I don't care if it's live or dead. I'm still throwing it out there. They'll still eat it. Artificial-wise, the bait buster, the Terrorize has picked up a little bit. I have a hard time throwing that Terrorize because I just end up hooking a 80-pound fish and they straighten out the hook. But the guys love them.
Well, I'd rather hook up and lose than not hook up at all.
That's true, too, sometimes, but I love actually landing them.
Yeah, I know.
It's just fun for me. Storm baits. A couple guys have even been hooking some fish on topwaters.
I'm going to be afraid to throw a big topwater, that big X-Walk.
The larger skitter walk and full-size Aerospoke, the bigger top dog.
Yeah.
The top dog, the full size Aerospoke, and
that big
skitter walk.
Yeah, the big X walk.
The one we wrote about last week.
Yeah. That thing's huge, but it is phenomenal on the tarpon in the hole.
Yeah, people look at it and go, what are you going to do with that thing? It's like, I'm throwing a 14 to 16 inch ladyfish. That 8 inch plug is nothing.
Right.
Big deal.
No, that's a real good size for tarpon.
I had a conversation with a guy the other day about tarpon. And it was about in the harbor, and he was talking about ladyfish. And he's like, yeah, the problem is all I get is these big ladyfish that are 18, 22 inches. And?
Yeah.
Put a hook in it and let it swim. It will get eaten, I promise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but the fish aren't that big. Dude, I've seen 50-pound tarpon eat a 24-inch ladyfish.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we used to use for snook bait.
That does not matter.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, the same thing. We catch snook on 24-inch ladyfish.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I'm using 12, 14, 16, 18-inch ladyfish to catch snook with, and they were 40 to 48 inches long.
Right.
Not even a 6-foot tarpon. So
right.
No, that's great size bait. The other lure I would go with is the 3/4 ounce rattle trap out there. Goes deep, working slow, noisy as heck.
Right.
There's nothing annoys a fish more than a rattle trap.
Hey, there's that X-Walk.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, I got one laying right on my desk. All right. Okay. What do you think of this white?
I like it.
You going to use the white, the big extreme action X-Walks? X-Walk.
Yes. I think if I was going to throw a rattle trap out there, honestly, I'd probably throw the 1 or 2 ouncer.
Yeah, that big.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, we were just talking about it.
It's harder to work it slow because slow is kind of the key thing right now with some of those artificials, but I like the size of it for out there in the 20-foot hole. Now, if I was targeting those tarpon over there towards Fisherman's Village and stuff like that, yeah, I'm going to go down to the 1/2 ounce, maybe the 3/4 ounce.
Yeah, I'm going to say you're right. I'm going to say I got that one wrong. And that 1 ounce, I think we still got some of those big, with the weird pink colors in it.
Yeah, I think there's a couple out there.
That would be a phenomenal bait right now with this dark water, getting anything with pink on it first going deep like that. And no matter which one you throw, figure on falling about 1.5 feet a second in the water. So if you're in the 20-foot hole, I'm counting to 10, 12, before I start to reel it in. When I cast and I see the lure splash the surface, leave the bail open, count to at least 8, if not 10, before you start to bring that lure back. Get some depth out of it.
I've done fairly good with that rattle trap too, like vertical jigging it, almost casting out and letting it sink and just raising my rod up at a hard whack, bringing it up and then letting it flutter down sideways the way it wants to wobble as it goes down, and then bringing it back up, occasionally giving it a few extra cranks to kind of get it coming up and forward in the water column, and then pausing and
same way
it sink.
I'm doing the bait busters.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think we'd be in an exact agreement on that.
Yeah, I work it kind of the same way I do work a bait buster.
What about you, Josh?
I don't fish a rattle trap a whole lot, but that is the way I work a bait buster. Same thing. Yeah, throw it out, let it sink, and then give it a couple good pops, reel up the slack, let it fall.
Yeah,
give it just more good pops.
I don't think you could get a more annoying lure than a rattle trap for a fish.
Oh, no, yeah,
I think half the time they just knock it just to shut it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's an underrated bait altogether. I mean, my very first redfish I ever caught was on a rattle trap.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, you didn't snook with when I was a kid growing up down in fishing Flamingo in Florida Bay. You didn't go snook fishing unless it was with a blue and blue and silver rattle trap. I mean, that's just what we used when we went snook fishing. That's what you use.
It and you kind of we kind of grew away from them. Yeah. And we actually Robert and I got together and reinvented a new rattle trap. And you can only get it here at Fish and Frank's because, you know, Robert and I got together and invented it. And I got some advice on it from Captain Josh and Kale and everybody else in here, you know, Mike and Jeff and everybody. But Robert and I worked on it, and now we have a shallow water rattle trap. It is a twitch bait. It's for 1 to 3 feet of water. You twitch it just like you would a mirror lure or mirrodine. And we went to that because the mirrodine is probably the ultimate little twitch bait. I mean, it's just as really as good as you need to get. You've got X wraps, you've got all these lures, and we just didn't have anything different. And rattle traps are naturally different.
Yeah,
they have a different pull, different action, and so you can get the twitch and trap right here at Fish and Frank's. We have two or three colors. We got a new shipment on the way for as far as I think we're out of one of the colors, but the gold and the white I think we still have in. I think we're out of the green and white, but
yeah,
anyway, we're going to be getting all those refilled, and we're going to add a new color to the thing. It is the if you got 1 to 3 feet of water,
absolutely.
And, you know, I'm time a beach for a snook.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both on the same page right there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be phenomenal with the amount of white bait that's right up there along the surf.
It's got the right shape, the right
and everything. You can change your retrieve of your action from fast to slow to very moderate. You know, you can kind of and play with it so much.
Yeah. It would be the Mirror Lure Mirrodines, the Storm Twitch Bait, or the Fish and Frank's Twitch and Trap from Rattle Trap. Not to get off the subject, but get off subject a minute. You're getting all keyed up for hunting right now, aren't you, Josh?
That's what I've been doing for, archery season opened the first weekend in August, so.
You've been doing a lot of trips, taking people out, catching, or shooting deer.
We've been doing some hunting, yeah.
So,
gator season just opened, so.
What are you hunting? Archery for deer?
Archery for deer, which I don't do a lot of guided deer hunts, because there's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's Florida. Man. Yeah.
Yeah. I get to shoot maybe 2 deer a year. I'm not going to take you to shoot now, 2 deer
what is,
a year.
What is the axis deer? Is that becoming bigger down here?
The axis deer are on a lot of private, you know, high fence ranches around here. And there's actually, up on Kings Highway, there is a wild breeding herd of axis deer.
Yeah, Hurricane Charlie knocked down the fences. Yeah. They took off. I've seen them up there, I would guess, at least 175. At least 175 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, huge, big deer.
And it's a big herd now because they're breeding and they're multiplying.
Right. I think that's going to be actually huntable numbers here in the next few years because...
Yeah, we'll see where it goes.
It's been 10 years they've been breeding there.
I don't know how far the state's going to let them go, you know. I mean, in big numbers. I don't think the state wants another deer running around here eating forage that our native deer eat, but we'll see.
I think there's room enough for everybody. But so, anyway, I guess we're going to kind of wrap this up. Any last thoughts, Robert?
Just stay hydrated and get out early and avoid those thunderstorms. I mean, like you said before, you get out at right when it's still dark. Plan on coming home by 11 or 12 because, I mean, in the
middle
of the
day. Be in the
house
by 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
sure.
One
or
of the
go way out late in the afternoon again, you know, after those thunderstorms subsided and fish into the dark.
If you don't have a bimini or a T-top and you're going to anchor up and fish, a great idea if you have an umbrella, like a beach umbrella or something like that laying around the house.
That's what I've got on mine.
Put in the rod holder next to your center console and just open it up. Don't try and leave it there when you run. That umbrella will not be there when you get after you hit 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour. But while you're just sitting up or on the trolling motor, just put the beach umbrella up, strap it off to the center console, and it fit right in a rod holder. And it's a great way to, you know, give yourself a little bit of shade in a boat. And if you already own one, you know, you don't have to buy one. But you can get them relatively cheap, a good 6 foot diameter.
I buy cheap ones because they all tear up.
Yeah. Just find some on sale. And, yeah, find one on sale and just stick it in the rod holder. And it's great. It only takes a rod holder and a bungee cord to put a beach umbrella on a boat. So, any final thoughts there, Josh?
Nope, same thing. Be careful. I mean, it's hot. You could really get in trouble.
Yeah.
You got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know.
But anyway, the good news is everything's going along pretty good. The fishing's not bad. it's by no means great. I'm going to call it a very good time for tarpon and sharks. The rest of the stuff, it's a little mediocre on right now, but getting better. And
that's okay, because you don't want to be back in the backcountry hiding behind islands right now. You want to take advantage of every bit of breeze there is.
Yeah, you want to be out in the middle of that harbor. Yeah, you don't want to be in the back of a creek right now. No. Unless you're trying for your, you know, once-in-a-lifetime personal record snook, you know, being back there putting up the heat. But just remember, the best way to, if all of a sudden you don't feel good, you start getting a little dizzy, fire that boat up, and don't go fast, but get up about 10, 15 miles an hour, get yourself a good breeze in your face, and you'll be fine.
Yep.
So, anyway, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and we got Captain Josh over there, and we're going to let Bobby take us out of this. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. I've been kind of taking some time off, and it's been 4 years since I really got to take a lot of time out of the store, and I am really enjoying it and coming back a happier, nicer, not the jerk I've been over the last few months. I'm trying to be a better person.
He was a jerk?
Yeah, that was a shock, wasn't it? So, anyway.
Didn't see that one coming.
Get the fishing done. Jump in my pickup. Give her a crank. I gotta talk with Fishing Frank. Fishing Frank is the guy who knows where the redfish and the tarpon go.
See, Bobby from says it. It's got to be real.
It's online. It's got to be true.
That's right.
Because he's got the tackle and the know-how, too. And more than willing to share with you. The guys with the most fish in their tanks have surely been to Fishing Frank's. You got to go to Fishing Frank's. The one who knows his Fishing Frank.
Thank you guys. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.